This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, celebrating today the life of Lon Simmons, the longtime Giants, 49ers, and A's announcer. You might not know that sports announcing is my main job. I'm blessed to call events nationally on ESPN from time to time, and I'm privileged to be the radio voice of the Fresno State Bulldogs for football, basketball, and baseball. 60 years ago, that's exactly what Lon Simmons was doing. We've heard about his early baseball exploits and his time in the Coast Guard, and let's pick it up with his return home to Southern California at age 23 after 3.5 years serving in World War II.
Rod Dater at USC used to always play Douglas Brothers semi-pro team. They'd play them 2 games, one at Bovard Field and one at Griffith Park. And so Douglas Brothers had played USC for years. They never had beaten them. So I come back, and so I'd only thrown the ball a couple of times in almost 4 years.
Thrown it off
and
the
so
ship,
I,
yeah.
So I come back, and they asked me if I could come and pitch for them. They were playing USC and Bovard Field. So I wanted to see Rod Dato, so I said, okay, I'll go over. I pitched a complete game against USC. I think we beat them like 14-6 or 7 or something. I didn't pitch a flawless game, but I must have thrown 200 pitches, and I pitched the entire game. That was on a Saturday. Well, they were playing them the next Saturday at Griffith Park. The Douglas brothers were so happy they won that game and said, well, you got to come back and pitch the next one. So I didn't throw any more between that game and the next Saturday, and I went back and pitched the next Saturday against USC, and I pitched a 2-hit shutout against them. So I'd pitched 18 innings in a week, and I don't know how many pitches, not too many in the two-hitter. So then the scout that I'd known before, he wanted to send me back to Terre Haute and said that I should send me back there to the field. And he said, you don't have to. I said, I don't want to sign. I want to go to school and all this sort of stuff. Well, you don't have to sign. So he sent me back there. And so I thought, well, it'll be a nice trip. I'll go back there. So I went back there, and I worked out with him, and I wasn't in condition to pitch. And so they signed me. Now they decided, and so Mr. Stupid, they had offered me $1,000. I said, I can't sign for $1,000. $1,000 was quite a bit then. But instead of saying $25,000, I said, well, you'd have to give me $2,500, which seemed like a lot to me. Well, they did. So they signed me. So that night I went out, and the first night that I signed, I pitched to 3 guys and struck them out in the first inning. The second inning, I worked up in my first pitch. I felt this sharp pain in the back of my shoulder across the big shoulder blade. And so I finished the inning, got out of the inning. But my shoulder, a big knot cut up of his shoulder. And so I told him, I said, I've hurt my shoulder. And they were paying my bonus $500 a week. So they weren't going to let me stop pitching.
Right.
So I pitched with that, and they wouldn't let me go to the doctor. And so finally, when I came back from a road trip, I went to the doctor myself. And he said, oh, you just got a cold in your arm. It's all right. Well, I started pitching. What I did is I started pitching to keep the pain out of my shoulder. I started putting my elbow in, so I was pitching a different motion. I got so I could hardly throw the ball at all, so they released me, so they didn't have to pay me any more money. So then I came back, and the fabulous Douglas brothers, I came back, and they wanted me to pitch. So I said, okay, I'll try. Well, I pitched in the game, and the scout that had sent me back there, I don't know what word he got from him, but probably not very good word. I pitched the game, pitched a complete game, and pitched like hell. And the scout, about 4 innings in, got up and left because he thought I was BSing about. But after that game, I could not. It was just I pitched one game and won the game, and I pitched against some guys that I played against in college and semi-pro ball and stuff. And I saw them that night after the game, and I beat them. And they said, God, we kept waiting for you. You beat us with that changeup. We kept waiting for you to throw that fastball. And I said, man, that was my fastball. But it was interesting. I tried to pitch a lot after that and just never would heal up. It never would be. But I played fast pitch softball for a couple of years. Bill Thompson was the manager of the team for Technicolor. And I played center field for him, and I could throw the softball from center field and throw it around, and it didn't bother me, but I could not throw the baseball.
Well, I guess in retrospect, it's a good thing, because if you had, then we wouldn't have had you on the airwaves all these years to listen to.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have been on the airwaves, and I probably wouldn't have made the big leagues anyway.
How did you end up getting into broadcasting? How did you make that decision, and how did that fall into place for you?
Well, it's a long story, and I'll just hit it briefly. I took journalism in high school, and I had written for the local paper, and so I was working as a carpenter. I was working in construction, and I was not a very good carpenter. I was just a construction carpenter, and it didn't suit me at all, and I didn't see how I was going to spend the rest of my life doing that. It's a very noble profession, but it wasn't a very noble one for me because I wasn't very good at it. And so anyway, my wife, I don't know how we got to talking. She said, well, why don't you go see about getting a newspaper job? So I went to the Burbank newspaper, which I'd written things for when I was in high school, and asked him if I could get a job. And they said, well, you can't do sports because we have two guys on the sports scene here, and that's all we had room for. So we could put you on as the, what do they call it, where you go out and write about parties and stuff.
The entertainment scene or something.
Yeah, something like that. I said, no, I can't handle that. So my wife said, well, you know, you talk, you've got a good voice, so why don't you, maybe you could get in radio. So we found, and there was a radio, you could go to a radio school, and they would teach, you had to get a first-class ticket. They would teach you the idea of radio mechanically and also help you broadcasting. So I went to that, and I worked as a carpenter in the daytime, and I went to the school at night. Three times a week. So then I could go to a small station. If you could speak English and you had a license, you could get a job. And a lot of small stations, they needed people. I got one at Elko, Nevada. And I talked to the guy, and he said, well, after talking to you, you've got the first-class license, right? And I said, yeah. Well, he said, 50% is not bad. You don't speak English very well. And so I got the job up there, and I worked there for just a little over a month. I came back because I had been promised a job in Sacramento, which I wasn't smart enough to know that I couldn't handle. And so when they opened the station, they did offer me a job. So I came back, went to work for a contractor for a while, and then I got a thing where there was an opening in Yuba City, Marysville. So I called there, and I got that. And when I got that call, I said, okay, guys, here's the toolbox. You can take my tools. I'm not going to use them ever again. So I gave away my tools, and I went to Marysville, and that's where I started. And I did sports for nothing. And I did a DJ job and sports for nothing, and then that got me where I could do football and baseball and basketball. And then I got the chance to go to Fresno, where I strictly did sports, and then I got a chance to go to San Francisco, and that's the way it went.
And what was Fresno like when you got here? What was that, about 1954?
No, 1953. It was, you know, wasn't like it is now. It wasn't that big or that many freeways or anything. It was a fun time. It was a good place. KMJ, McClatchy had KMJ and had a TV station and had the newspaper. So it was a pretty good outfit to work with.
And, you know, two of my favorite voices of all time would be yours and Jack Hanna's. Jack is still here. He tours the world singing with the Sons of San Joaquin.
Oh, yeah. Jack was pitching for Fresno State when I broadcast the game.
That's why I brought it up. What do you remember about him?
He was something. He could throw it. And they went up to play USC in the playoffs up in Oregon. And
right.
I couldn't go up there. I had to recreate it. But Jack pitched the game up there, and he was so sure that he was going to beat USC that he was crying when he finished. He was so into it. And he did. He beat him. But they lost other game or something. But he beat USC anyway in one of the playoff games.
And you were back here in Fresno recreating that game. This is something that's always fascinated me because you know, I love announcing a baseball game, but I can see it. To announce a game that you can't see and you're dependent on a little piece of paper coming across this ticker machine, how did you do that? How did you come up with the creativity to make that sound like you were actually there?
Well, the thing about that was that a lot of guys use sound effects and everything. I didn't use sound effects, but I just announced it like I was at the game. You would get the information on the ticker about ball one, strike one, or fly ball to right. And then in one inning, I got two outs. There was a runner on, and I got two outs, and they didn't send me to third out.
So how'd you kill
now,
time?
Now I realized that when I started the next inning, I was going to have a batter come up. Now, if the guy had been thrown out on the bases, the same batter would be up there. If he made an out, the next batter would be up. So I had to take a choice, and I guessed right. I said he made an out, and so I got through that anyway.
I don't know that I could ever do that, to get two words and turn it into a whole paragraph on the air and a whole picturesque description of what's happening. That takes a special skill.
Well, I don't know how good I did it. I just did it. But then you probably had to broadcast the One-Toed Derby either. I had to broadcast that.
Out in Kalinga?
Yeah. I broadcast that. And unfortunately, Randy Elliott, who was doing the color for me, so to speak, you had to be very careful about making a spoonerism out of Horned-Toed Derby.
Oh, I imagine, yeah.
And Ramsey was interviewing the pastor who was the head of the parade. Ramsey is talking to him, and he's going to set really slow for him, and you can cut this out if you want. But he said, "We're very happy, Reverend, to have you here at the annual Horned-Toed Derby." It was interesting. You learned it. Well, Al Michaels had to do arm wrestling to get his career kicked up. So you have to do little things along the way. And you know, you worked your way through different situations too.
And the Horned-Toed Derby kind of takes the cake for you?
Yeah, that was probably one of my biggest challenges.
And then you went from Fresno to San Francisco, of course, when Major League Baseball finally made it to the West Coast. We don't have time to talk about everything that you did in the major leagues and in the NFL, but do you have moments that you look back on and you say, you know what, that is what it was all about. That's what made it so worthwhile to me, and that's what I'm so proud of all these years later?
My biggest highlight of my career ever was 1960 at the Winter Olympics. We had to broadcast everything. We had to broadcast the figure skating, speed skating, the slaloms, all that stuff. We broadcast. So try to think how you're going to broadcast guy coming down the hill on the ski. But anyway, I broadcast the U.S. hockey games.
Mm-hmm.
And 1960 was the first year that the U.S. had defeated Russia and the first year that they'd won a gold medal. And since 1960, they've been just about forgotten. The 1980 team, they give them all these awards and everything. If I were on that 1960 team, I would say, wait a minute, what about us? We did it first. But it was the most exciting game I've never seen an arena or anything where there was so much electricity involved, so much in it that it was just unbelievable. I've never been involved in one Super Bowl, World Series, anything. I've gotten carried away, but not to that extent. It was the most remarkable sporting event I've ever done. And then they had to come back and win the next game to get the gold medal, the same way it was in 1980. After they beat Russia, they had to beat Finland, and they did. And so it was just a remarkable thing. And that was probably my highlight of my broadcasting career. You know, the Giants, 49ers, there were some great, always some great games with the 49ers. And the same way with the Giants. And I got to meet a lot of wonderful people who are still great friends of mine, which certainly makes it very, very worthwhile.
I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you about the origins of Tell It Goodbye and how it feels to be in the announcer's wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, Tell It Goodbye, I don't know exactly how I came up with that phrase, but Russ said, bye bye baby, and I couldn't say that for a home run. His reason for saying bye bye baby was that if people were casually listening to the radio, they knew something good had happened for the Giants when they heard bye bye baby. So I decided I would say Tell It Goodbye, so that just sort of got in there, and then I added the way back stuff to it. The Hall of Fame was, it was something that I still don't believe I deserve. It was an honor, but it was one that was sort of muted by the fact that I didn't honestly feel that I was up and still don't feel that I was in that level of announcer. You can judge your own talents better than anybody else can judge them. And I, it's the way when I retired, I felt that when I had it, I would know it, and I did. I was making mistakes that I shouldn't make. I wasn't doing things that I thought I should do. So that's when I decided to quit. They said I could work there as long as I wanted, but that was as long as I wanted because I didn't think I was doing the job. And it was the same way. I don't put myself in the class with announcers like Scully and Hodges and Allen and people like that. They're in a different level. But it's nice to have the people in San Francisco both for me and say that they enjoyed me. And so that was my pleasure that I got out of it, that the people in San Francisco had felt that I should be there.
Well, and I'm guessing if you've been listening today, you probably feel that way too. Lon Simmons, a voice we'll never forget. Another man who knew firsthand from his World War II Coast Guard service that freedom is not free. Normally, that's the thought I leave you with, but this time, let's wrap up with one of baseball's best announcers describing a big moment from one of the greatest players of all time, complete with that signature finish.
Willie Mays up here drew a walk his first time. Runners at first and third with now one man out. A long, high drive hit to left field. That one's going way back. Snyder back near the wall. Tell it goodbye.